and you would jump into it, and it was like you were jumping into the tub. It was hot.
That's because that water's like refreshing. 92.
Yeah, 75. That's why.
If you go from 92 to 75,
do you like 80 better? You.
I'm more like 83.
Okay.
Our pool is around 80.
Listen, I like hot tubs personally, so I'd be
in
fine.
The hot water.
But you don't
swim
in them. No. I would say 75, maybe 80 in the summer, and then anytime it's not hot outside, I want to just be in a hot tub.
I want to test this theory because I really want to get you 75 degree water and be like, this is what you asked
for. I don't own a pool, so maybe I don't have the perfect temperature gauge on the water. I don't know. I just 75 seems like it'd be pretty warm.
Our goal on this podcast is to know Jesus better, and by the power of his spirit, do better, so together we can be a little better.
Welcome to A Little Better Podcast. This is week 5 of our series called Storyteller, which is just all about Jesus' words. I'm joined here today by Drew and by Brad. Both you guys are going to be preaching in this series.
That's right.
So Brad, you are teaching this week. You shared some about the unforgiving servant. So Would you just mind giving us in 60 seconds, what did you share about Jesus' words?
Yeah, so the unforgiving servant, it's all about forgiveness, but a lot of it's about misunderstanding forgiveness or getting it wrong. So Jesus is trying to explain to Peter, you know, the nature of forgiveness. So we tell the story, which is that the servant is forgiven billions of dollars, and then we think that, you know, is a great outcome until he goes and owes a guy a couple $1,000 and starts choking him. So the king throws him in jail and tortures him. I mean, it's a grim, sad story. So we kind of have to ask ourselves what goes wrong. So we talked about, dimensions or aspects of forgiveness. And we talked about receiving forgiveness because we have this vertical encounter with God. Nothing works unless we receive forgiveness from him. And it's amazing. It's overwhelming. It transforms us when we genuinely experience it. And then that impacts our horizontal relationships with others. So we have to choose forgiveness as others wrong us. We have no right to refuse forgiveness given the fact that we've been forgiven so much. And then when we have opportunities to extend forgiveness where it can, you know, repair a relationship, you know, maybe reconcile, you know, set people right. But sometimes we just have to forgive, and it's just the internal work that we do. But sometimes we get a chance to connect with others. But the real question is, how do we know we're truly forgiven? And the way we know we're truly forgiven, that we have an authentic experience of repentance, is when others wrong us, and then we are both willing, even eager, to forgive
them. Yeah, it's like that experience of receiving forgiveness allows us to understand what it is so that we can then offer that to others. And we're called to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the experience of forgiveness, it's genuine. It happens before. It's not that the way we treat others earns our forgiveness. It's not a rapport kind of stuff. But it's just we don't know if it's genuine unless we see it in the ways we interact with others. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for that teaching. And I know there's so much always that you study and then you funnel that down into a message. So I wonder, Drew, if there's anything that you would add. If you were teaching this sermon, what would you, if you got an extra 5-10 minutes, what would you put in there? What would you add to this parable?
That's a good question. I think I would, you know, talk a little bit about the nuances of how you handle someone like the unforgiving servant. Like, how do you navigate someone who you forgive but doesn't receive that forgiveness and continues to act the same way, right? Like, what are the healthy steps to try to distance yourself in a healthy way? I think I would add, like, just how do I know I've truly forgiven somebody? We talk about forgiveness a lot, but like in my heart, like I've been wronged many times, and I want to say I've forgiven that person, but I'm still angry and I'm still mad, and I still want to respond. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Have I truly, is forgiveness truly landed in my heart or not? I think those are things that I would like to talk about. You know, like I was thinking while you're preaching, Brad, like this could be a great, just this parable could be a great series. Like the first part, vertical relationship with God, mm-hmm. and like how that impacts our forgiveness. And then the horizontal, like how do we forgive and have we forgiven? And what happens when someone you forgive doesn't respond the way you want? Like there's so many good things
there's so much in there.
That could be this parable could be a series, because forgiveness is really hard and really complex and really nuanced. And so it's hard to just, you know, totally move people in a direction when there's so many questions.
Dude, oh, yeah. I love that. I love the concept of like, how do we unpack whether or not we've actually done it? I mean, if you're listening to this, I hope you've had the experience of forgiveness vertically. And I know we've all had the experience of either somebody asking us for forgiveness or knowing that we need to, quote, move on, but trying to figure out how is it that we do that and how do we know when we've actually done it? So, yeah, I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on practically what does that look like? How do you know that you've truly forgiven someone?
And timeline, like how long do I have? Right? Obviously the Bible tells us that we should forgive, right? Mm-hmm. That's clear. Like forgiveness is not an option because of what we've been forgiven. Mm-hmm. But how long does it take to truly forgive, right? Like someone hurts me, am I just instantly like, oh, I forgive you? Well, okay, but like what does that even mean? You know, and like what is the timetable of mm-hmm. forgiveness?
Yeah, I think it can be very long. Yeah, and I certainly agree.
So could you, we need you to answer.
Well, I was going to say, I certainly agree about making this a series. I had a hard time squeezing what I did share into 25 minutes. Hopefully I didn't move too fast through it. But you said the question you wanted was, how do we know we've really done it?
How do you know that you've forgiven someone?
Well, you were also asking about like the timeline on it. So first off, a plug, we'll put it in the show notes, is Tim Keller's book, Forgive. He wrote it a couple years ago, and I read that for this, which also is just like there's so much good stuff here that you want to include, you know, in a sermon, but you can't do that in 25 minutes. And he's got 200 pages, you know, to do it. But he does talk about the fact that forgiving others is paying down a debt, you know, and you think about, you know, there's real damage done by sin and hurts. And when we forgive others, we are paying down their debt. It might be that, you know, there's financial repercussions, you know, there's money to replace or relationships to heal or trust to rebuild. And he talks about the fact that those payments, it's never just one time instant payment. It's going to be over time. And it's going to be times where it comes up and then you feel it and you feel your animosity, you feel your challenge, you remind yourself of the cross, and then you just get prayerfully back to that place of playing it down. Or someone talks about it and you have this temptation. You want to be defended. You want your side of the story out there or whatever else, but you're not defending yourself. It's just part of paying it down. And sometimes, you know, it's a while before you look in the rearview mirror and say, oh, my heart really has changed and I really have, you know, become more merciful or patient, but it takes time.
I think there's some important, like really important clarifications when it comes to forgiveness, right? Because we talk about forgiveness, even you mentioned this, Brad, which is so true. Like when you forgive someone, it sets you free. Okay. Mm-hmm. But there's things that it doesn't set you free from.
Right.
Right. Okay. It doesn't mean you're going to be free from pain.
Right.
Right. Right. That pain is still going to be there. So I think it's important for people to know, like, you can forgive someone and still be really hurt. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean like, oh, I've forgiven that person. And now that pain that they caused is going to go away. That pain might never go away. Right. I think it's also important to say, like, to me, when you look at this story, forgiveness, you really know you've forgiven someone when you don't use that against them anymore, right? Mm-hmm. The debt has been paid, mm-hmm. right? So the guy, the king, lets go of that debt. And now he can't go to that guy anymore and say, you owe me because it's been cleared, right? That doesn't mean the king doesn't still feel the weight of not having that billions of dollars.
Oh,
right?
He's got to come up
he's
with
gonna
it.
He's going to feel the way.
Compensate somehow.
It's going to affect
We're not 100% sure.
And so
22
billion. For me, like, I think in my marriage, when my wife hurts me or when I hurt her, the clear sign of forgiveness is I'm not going to leverage that hurt against you
right.
anymore.
Mm-hmm. Won't bring it up.
And when you feel that sting, right, when that moment comes up where that triggers that thing that person hurt you, I think a good indicator of I've forgiven them is this is not my opportunity to get you back.
Mm-hmm.
Like
absolutely.
That reveals to my heart mm-hmm. that hurts. I'm not going to hold it against you.
Right. Yeah, I think it's that switch between wanting vindication, which usually means I want them to suffer. I want them to acknowledge. I want everyone to know the truth of the story to, actually wanting the good, mm-hmm. you know, for the other person. You know, I've been forgiven. Others have forgiven me. Being on the other side of grace is wonderful. I want that experience for them. And I also want them to shed, you know, the hurt, the harmful, unjust behaviors, you know, they're in. And that's why we rebuke. You know, sometimes there's that, you know, you're taking that step because you're not minimizing it. I think that's apart from a Christian framework, so many people, they can't really face up to the reality of the hurt, of how bad it is. They just have to say, get over it, minimize it. Let's pretend it wasn't that big a deal. But in Christ, we know, you know, how serious it is and how real the sin is.
I think that's so true. In a world where it's difficult for us to even talk to people who think differently, mm-hmm. where we cancel culture, right? We just cancel people right out if they say something that
right.
offends us. If they've done something that's truly and genuinely wrong, they're gone.
Right.
We refuse to be in communication, to be associated with them in any way.
Yeah.
And forgiveness is, it's kind of the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. Or even like in a Ted Lasso sense, like he's like one of the first TV characters that I've seen in a very long time that said, oh, we're going to forgive. And that was like one of the themes, you know, in that mm-hmm. TV show was people do the wrong thing and we forgive them anyway, even though it doesn't take the hurt away,
right.
even though it still is painful. We're going to say, oh yeah, we're going to forgive. But the source of that forgiveness isn't just, we love this soccer team. It's Jesus forgave me, so I have the power to forgive.
I think that's what makes forgiveness, though, a little bit complicated because there's this battle, at least we feel this battle of forgiveness and justice, right?
Mm-hmm.
But ultimate forgiveness deleted justice and took on injustice, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Jesus forgave us and it was an injustice to him.
Right.
But there's in forgiveness, there's also this like balance of there is injustice in forgiveness, but when I'm being abused, it's okay to want justice. And those lines get very blurry altogether because when we look at our vertical relationship with Jesus, he paid our penalty. He took on our shame. He took on our guilt. It was injustice on his behalf to forgive us, right? And so we want to model that, but there are times where like we don't want to either, right? We want to forgive, but there has to be justice. And it to me, it gets hard to like figure out those lines.
Yeah, that the anger, the wrath, that we have an angry God in this story, right, in this parable. And clearly, if the king is portraying God, and Jesus says at the end of the parable that he is,
yeah.
that's a righteous anger, that
yeah.
there was a rightness to that anger. So there are things that it is right to be angry about. And I think it's Tim Keller that says, like, you know, love and wrath, they're not in opposition to each other. They're really the same
thing. Cohesive, yeah.
And they're the same thing because wrath is this settled opposition to that which is destroying what we love. So if my children are engaging in destructive behavior, I mean, I love them, but I might be angry about their choices, you know. I think what happens is a lot of times our wrath, it comes because what is threatened is not what God loves. What's threatened is what we love. Mm-hmm. And it might be our reputation, our good name, you know, yeah. you know, some sort of report card or esteem or bell curve or whatever, you know, it might be. So it's very hard to, yeah, it does become hard to tease out, what am I angry at? You know, am I, is this a clean and righteous anger at what, you know, is in this relationship and shouldn't be in this relationship? Or am I?
And you're chasing after, right? What is natural for us is getting back at people. Someone hurts me, I'm going to hurt them. Those are the easy things. And forgiveness is an unnatural, supernatural thing. And that's why it's
an act
hard.
Of the Spirit. It is. Right? Yes. Like, it is the Spirit of God working in you that you can forgive someone of a debt that they owe you. And you say, I receive forgiveness. So therefore, I'm going to give it. Mm.
I agree with you. I think it's two-dimensional. I think it is. This is something supernatural. It is absolutely the power of God. It's the Holy Spirit of God. It is life coming from death. You know, it is something only possible to God. But you can also see, just in terms of how we think about it, you know, where the world, I don't know where the world, apart from a Christian framework, gets the leverage, you know, because for us, it's because we have been forgiven, you know, so much, then of course we can, you know, forgive others. But apart from a Christian framework, I just don't, where do people get a basis for, you know, forgiveness? It's just a power game. It's just back and forth. It's strictly horizontal.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, when I think about, you know, our church, we're trying to make more and better disciples. We want to see people living out their faith and just passionately pursuing Jesus. Forgiving other people is one of those things that would definitely fall into the sharpening category, right? Mm-hmm. Do you guys have any stories that you can tell? I mean, I know sometimes, like, something personal that you could share, or stories of people that you know that have been able to forgive big debts that just really challenge you?
I can think of one. This is probably 12 years ago. You guys remember the Amish shooting and the milkman?
Oh my, yeah.
So that was 5 minutes from Ashley's house growing up. So her dad, he is a nutritionist for farms. So he works with a lot of Amish. He knew the Amish family. And right, so basically the milkman who delivers milk to the schoolhouses, I don't know what happened in his mind, but he decided to lock the doors and kill all the kids. And one of the greatest acts of forgiveness was one of the families came out and just basically said, after not even a couple days afterwards, right? They've lost kids and they just announced to the world, we forgive.
Yeah.
You know, again, Tim Keller in that book, he talks about the Amish and how they have the resources and tools to forgive. And they're taught, and it's, they have a community that says, we will not choose, we renounce, you know, revenge, we renounce payback, because God will ultimately, you know, deliver wrath on all wrongs, right? So they have a framework. It's we cry out against injustice.
Justice belongs to God.
Justice belongs to God, and it will ultimately be served. We can take comfort in that, and it belongs to Him, and it's a good thing we're not the judge, you know, because when we're the judge, it goes badly. But the Amish, but if you don't have that framework, you know, then there's this sense of injustice, and you don't know how it will ever be satisfied except through activism or revenge or something.
And realistically, if we want to talk about justice, none of us want it.
Right.
Right? Like, at the end of the day, if we get justice, all of us get the same thing.
It's what makes God so good.
Yes.
That He is both. That He delivers justice, but willingly chooses to give us
grace.
Forgiveness.
Yep.
And then as we follow Him, if we're living a life like Jesus, if we're following the ways that He practiced, we have to do it too. And then that's where the rubber hits the road and it hurts. But I think that's where some of that sharpening comes into play. I had the opportunity About 5 years ago, I was in the Middle East. I was in Lebanon, and Lebanon is about a third of the country are Syrian refugees. So if you look at the population, there's a ton of people that have had to run and flee from their homes from the Syrian war. And they came over and were able, they were able to find, you know, some places to live there. But it's very difficult between those two countries. Lebanon was occupied by Syria. So you have the generation that's there right now living and hosting all these refugees. Their parents were tortured and killed and taken off and away by the Syrians. And now those churches are being asked to welcome them in, to do what is right by refugees, right? We want to welcome refugees, welcome the stranger. Jesus was a refugee. And I met a young man and he told me his story. And he said, yeah, my dad, he died at the hands of some soldiers. They came and I was a little boy and I watched him be taken away and I never saw him again. And then he talked about just how it was that, we were able to, like, how he was able to even interact with Syrians. And his current job is to serve refugees, Syrian refugees. And he said, you know, I was on worship team and this man came from Syria and he was on the worship team and I wanted to join. And I was like, I don't think I could join with him. Like, I just can't. I can't. I hate him. And so he started praying about joining the worship team. And he was like, God, is there any other way that I could serve you? Because I don't want to serve you there. And he ends up joining the worship team. He ends up becoming friends with this man. And God works in his heart to become able to forgive something so big and precious. So we talked earlier. I mean, there is just this wrestling with forgiveness. We have to work toward forgiveness. We have to bring it to Jesus over and over again. Yeah. But there is deliverance. There is healing. God can do it in our hearts because he does it for other people.
Yeah, I think that's true. And so many stories I read and heard about where obviously, you know, it starts with the prayer, but it also starts with the actions before the feelings. You know, it's just like, this is something I need to do in obedience to God. I know Corrie ten Boom tells a similar story of meeting one of the guards, you know, at the prison where her sister died. And she's like, I know this is right. I don't want to do it. I don't feel it. I will say the words I need to say. But after she said them, you know, there was kind of a dam, you know, that broke where it was a work of God, you know, in her heart. So I do think that we have to have some of those steps of obedience, you know, maybe before. If we're waiting for the feelings, they probably will never come.
Yeah. Your feelings won't lead you to forgiveness, that's for sure.
Yeah.
No, they sure won't. Okay, so what's next? What's coming up next in Storyteller?
I know, because I'm preaching.
Yeah, what are you preaching about?
So we are jumping into the prodigal son, the parable of the prodigal son. Maybe one of the most well-known parables. I was trying to think of
I'd put it up there. Probably. I'd say number one.
Yeah. So, yeah, a unique look at the prodigal son. So I won't give too much away, but that's where we're headed.
Okay.
And we did mention it on Sunday, but between now and the next A Little Better podcast, we will get that Malawi bonus podcast coming. So if you want to get some more.
Yeah, there's a bonus episode of the podcast. It's dropping later this week. It was filmed in Malawi. Brad and Noah and I were all there, and this is why he's wearing this wonderfully crazy shirt right now that that his wife Karen made for him from some fabric from Malawi. But you'll get to see just a little bit more about our tales from there, the things that God is doing in the church in Malawi, the ways that he is working, and we just get to see it, to share it, to celebrate it. We're just excited. We're excited for what God's doing here and there. Mm-hmm. Guys, join us next week. We're going to be talking with Drew again about the prodigal son. So join us on our next episode of the podcast.